Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle, joined this week by Charlie Romeliotis and Slavko Bekovic. Boys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Not too bad.
Free agent signing period is underway. Hawks active on day one on Sunday. They signed goalie Cam Ward and forward Chris Kunitz to one-year deals. Defenseman Brandon Manning to a two-year deal. My initial reaction is, meh, okay. Upgrade in the backup goaltending department with Ward, and certainly a better insurance policy if Corey goes down for an extended period of time. I'd rather have the veteran in there who's able to carry the mail for, you know, 30-plus games or whatever it turns out to be. Kunitz, you know, he's going to be 39 soon, likely to play on that fourth line. You know, he could move around a little bit when Q hits the blenders. To me, the biggest asset he brings is some leadership to a relatively young team. We've talked in podcast past where, you know, it's a little division of church and state. Guys who've won the cups, guys who haven't. Maybe a guy who's won four but has won elsewhere will, you know, help blend this team together a little bit. And then the Brandon Manning signing brings some physicality to the back end. Sounds like they want to, you know, keep him as a stay-at-home defenseman. But again, he's a 5'6". D-man, a third-pairing guy, and we've got already a lot of those. So I'll just start with you, Charlie, your thoughts on what they did on day one.
Yeah, I thought it was a little underwhelming. We obviously knew about the Cam Ward signing, and I don't mind that signing at all. And I know the $3 million cap hit, like, it doesn't bother me. You needed a backup goaltender. You needed to pay for it. The one-year deal is fine. The Chris Kunitz, again, like, I don't mind the Chris Kunitz signing. It's just that can't be the only signing up front that you make. Like, right. That's a fourth line guy, and he's probably gonna play on the penalty kill too. He played a lot of it in Pittsburgh, and
he's not gonna help
Tampa.
The power play.
Yeah, he's not gonna help the power play. And I kind of look at this as like a Patrick Sharp type signing too. You just want someone in there with the guys with DeBrinket and Schmaltz, just there to, you know, help take their game to another level off the ice and, you know, kind of keep them in a comfortable zone. You know, and then the Brandon Manning, like, I don't mind the Brandon Manning, but that's the only guy that you signed, and the cap hit was a little high for me. So you've got a bunch of these defensemen that are, you know, fringe bottom pairing defensemen, and like, there are no game breakers or no impact type players there. So I don't know if they have something up their sleeve and they're waiting to see how the market plays out with Calvin DeHaan or whoever. And, you know, maybe they try to pouch a top four guy via trade once, you know, teams decide, you know, they've missed out on their guys. But I'm not sure. Stan Bowman was on the pregame live show towards the end of the season, and he said, like, this team is going to look similar, you know, this year to next year, because we – like, I thought it was, you know, kind of like a decoy. I mean, it's really looking like it.
Because remember, he'd signed all the defensemen at that time.
We're like, same day.
We're like, hold on a second here. Osterley, Gustafson, they're all getting re-signed, and we all identified the D as the biggest problem with the team, so why would you bring them all back? I mean, we'll get your thoughts on the free agents as general, but, like, who's Manning going to play with? He's a lefty shot, so he joins, you know, Keith, Gustafson, Forsling, Osterley, and Hillman as left-handed shots. So he's going to be paired likely with Seabrook, Murphy, or Joakim Harju if he makes the team. So maybe that's what they're thinking. Maybe they put the young Joakim Harju with a stay-at-home, older 20-something stay-at-home defenseman. I mean, that's the only one that makes sense to me, but your thoughts?
No, I entirely agree. I think Manning is their kind of cheap replacement for Nicklas Hjalmarsson. I think that's it. That's what they're thinking in their head, that he's not going to do a ton in the offensive zone. He's not going to help your power play very much, if at all. On a good team, he's a seventh defenseman. He's a guy that you can bring in if there's an injury, or, you know, if somebody just needs a day to get some rest, he's the guy that you bring in. He's good in his own zone. Stan Bowman said on the conference call after they made the announcements, he's a tough guy to play against and takes pride in being a defensive defenseman, but he also scored 7 goals. So if he's got the ability to get a shot through, that's great.
And on this team, that would have been like top two, second in scoring for a defenseman.
I mean, the ability to get a shot through is good enough for even strength, and that's something that the Hawks have struggled with recently. But I think you said it perfectly, Charlie. It's underwhelming. Kunitz, it's a nice signing. He's a 38. He's going to be 39 when the season starts. He's won 4 cups. He's going to be another good leader, you know, voice for these young guys. But like you said, Pat, we talked about it so often last year, a bit of a divide between the older guys who've been there and the new guys who are young and the future, as Bowman likes to put it. But they need to mesh and become one. It can't be a separation between those two. None of these moves are going to wow you. I think, if anything, what we saw and have seen with the free agent market is that the Tavares signing kind of made everything kind of slow down early. But the term is always going to be an issue. The Hawks don't want to sign a 31-year-old to a 4 or 5 year deal.
Well, look, we were in here on Sunday and we were watching TSN, and you know, they were putting graphic after graphic up on the screen how those who spend in free agency, unless you land Tavares or the JVR, who even JVR's contract is too much for what he brings to the table, but you rarely win in free agency in the NHL. I mean, the Dave Bolins, you can look at the Albatross signings, and guys in the last 5 years, they're not even in the league. They're in buyout mode. I mean, so I don't mind like being a little
frugal,
cash smart or frugal when it comes to, you know, spending. We got several questions here from the email bag. Noah Jennings is, do you think the Hawks have already made all the moves they're going to make? What is the likelihood of the roster right now being the same as opening night? Much to what Charlie was talking about, I'll quickly jump on this one and just say, no, they're going to make more moves. I think Anisimov had to turn in the 10 teams that he'd be willing to go to. I would assume they'll find a marriage there somewhere.
That contract now doesn't look awful at $4.5 million.
Yeah, compared to some of these deals.
Exactly. Yeah. You could do a lot worse than Anisimov, 4.5.
And so I don't see the roster being the same as it is now, July 2nd, as it will be on opening night. Sean says, no problem with adding Kunitz, but why another small player? Hawks need to beef up to compete with the Central Division. Not impressed with Stan's offseason as of now. Jen Perez jumps in here and says, what are the possibilities that the Hawks will sign Calvin DeHaan? Are there any possible trades they are thinking of? All right, let's try to tackle that one right now. DeHaan's still on the market. Look, he fits what they need, but his price tag is in that $5 million to $8 million range. I mean, I don't see that happening, obviously.
Yeah, I don't either. And it sounds like there's, you know, a handful of teams in the mix there. So you just know it's a bidding war between dollar amount and term. You know, whoever's going to give him the most term, he's probably going to go to. But then, you know, if the term is identical, it's whoever's going to give him the most dollar amount. And the Blackhawks obviously do not want to get in that kind of bidding war, I guess. I don't know. Are there any possible trades they're thinking of? I mean, like Anisimov, we talked about, like, could be traded. But at this point, like, I wouldn't even want to trade him because they didn't even address the center position. So, like, you take away Anisimov and, like, who's your bottom six?
Right.
Ideally, you would like to address a top four defenseman if you trade Anisimov. But, you know, I was under the impression if they're going to move Anisimov, you know, for a top four defenseman, they were going to go out and get a center on the free agent market. And it sounds like they were you know, pretty serious discussion with Thomas Plekanec, and then he re-signed in Montreal.
I thought that would have been a really good move for the Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been like 1-2 year deal, whatever. It would have been fine, but like you didn't address the center position, and there aren't many available decent center. Like Jay Beagle would have been perfect, but he got $4 million
yeah.
for 4 years. That's, you know,
yeah.
it's just, it's not, you can't do that. So I don't know.
That's
like
what winning
this point,
a cup does, right?
Exactly. That's
he's the exact example of, you know, he got $4 million per. Because he won a cup and was a role player, but he's a $2.75 million guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
He's basically an older Marcus Kruger. PK yeah. guy, face-offs pretty good. I think Hawks fans were a little bit bitter because he kills the Hawks. Seems like every time he's played yeah. the Hawks in the past, he scored a really big goal. I think he would have been a perfect fit too, but you have to be smart. And I don't fault Bowman for sitting back a little bit and letting a guy like JVR walk. DeHaan, I think, is a very slim possibility at this point. I mean, Ian Cole got 3 years, 4.25. The Hawks definitely weren't going to do 4.25 for him. I mean, DeHaan's probably going to get between 5 and 6 for probably 5 years because he's a little bit younger still. I mean,
and I wouldn't even have minded that 4.25 for Cole if it was 2 years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
I agree.
The third year is hard. If you're going to go the third year, then you want to get the number down to 3.5 range.
So,
it was hard. It's hard. This market was challenging. So I'm not surprised, but I am.
Yeah. What kind of, I don't want to say irks me, but it confuses me. The NHL just refuses to address the restricted free agent market. It just, well, offer sheets just don't happen.
No.
And I feel like it's kind of a handshake agreement between guys like, hey, we won't, you know, screw you over by signing this guy or that guy to an offer sheet. But the restricted free agent market had some really, really good names. And when you look at a guy like Namestnikov, who would have been a really good fit on that second line with Schmaltz and Kane at left wing, put some points up. He only got $4.5 million, and he's still young. I mean, that would have been great. You sign him to a $5 million offer sheet. That's something that's doable compared to $7 million and however many years for Van Riemsdyk.
You take a look at it. There, you know, there were talks that they were obviously interested in JVR, Ian Cole, Carter Hutton. Obviously, many of their targets receive bigger offers or longer term. They end up committing, you know, $6.25 million for the upcoming year with the three guys that they have added so far. So $6.25. Would you have liked to have seen that money allocated? Because we all admit, like, okay, you know, like none of them blow you away. Would you like to have seen them allocate, you know, like $5 million of the $6.25 to one difference-making player, so to speak, under a comfortable term than the route that they went with the three for $6.25.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that's what you would have wanted to see, but all of those guys that we're talking about went, you know, got 3 years or more. So, like Ian Cole, like, you know, he's the a perfect Joel Quenneville type defenseman. You know,
so he gets 3 years for 4.25.
Yeah,
I mean.
Is he really? I don't think he's really a top four D-man.
Yeah, if you don't think he's
team,
a top four, then right. then you got to punt on that one.
I mean, the free agent market was not very top heavy. There, you basically have Tavares, JVR, and after that,
a lot of other
else. Not a ton of guys. Just depth. Guys.
If you have a top four D, you usually hold on to those guys. I mean, we've talked about it. That's why the Hawks went for two puck-moving defensemen with their two first-round picks. You know, you get as many defensemen as you possibly can, hoping you hit on a 20 to 30% return rate on some of them and hope that they turn into top 4D.
Yeah, you want to know what's ironic about all this is that the only defenseman that could have been on the market that probably would have fit both year and term perfectly and system is Nicholas Jalmerson, and he signed 2 years, $5 million in Arizona. Like, I don't think the Hawks would have minded the $5 million if it was 2 years.
Oh, I think they give him that deal instantly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's better than committing that $6 million to, you know.
But that, just there's the also where you got to play no state tax, you know. So
yeah,
what it is in Arizona versus what it would be here in Chicago is
less.
Probably another $1.5 million
right.
more.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
You know, and he's also, you know, going through a divorce right now, so I think every dollar counts.
But I was expecting him to get more than 2 years. Like, I thought,
yeah,
you know, it was, you know, when Jalmerson was traded, it was like, oh, he's gonna get this big contract at the end of that, you know, at the end of when his however long it was, 4 years, I think, that extension ends. So, you know, pleasantly surprised.
All right, so let's figure out this defenseman situation, because, like, right now, I think it's, if you include Joakim Haru, they have 10 defensemen under contract for next season. That includes Adam Boqvist, who, that was a bit of a stunner. We all looked at each other like, You know, he's 17. He's obviously not going to play in the NHL next year. He can't play in the AHL next year. So he's
We're not sure yet, right? Well, didn't Stan say they're still working it out with
so
the
So is that gray area of 18?
I think because he never played at the top league.
Well, because he was on a loan with Portland. And I know we asked Stan at the draft, and he said we're still negotiating with the league. So I think it's still to be determined.
Well, yeah. Look, I'm not going to fault the way I took it was they want to have control over his development.
Absolutely.
So if that is their sole, you know, reason for signing him, God bless you. You know, I'd rather them be able to decide if he has to play overseas, handpick the team, any training regimen, support system that he needs over there, it goes through them. If he does end up in the AHL or wherever, stateside, they're going to have their hands on that, obviously, more closely. So, you know, at first I was like, boy, do they have him fast-tracked for, you know, like, not next year, but 2 years from now? I just took it as they want to be on top of his development.
And Stan said as much in their conference call. They just want to have their hand in whatever decisions are made as far as his development. It was a little bit surprising. Charlie and I were just talking about this. They gave him a roster number, which is a little odd. It might just be like a prospect camp thing, and that's coming up in a couple weeks here in July. I'm excited to see him on the ice, on the North American surface, playing with the Blackhawks guys, get to know some of these players that, you know, potentially he'll be paired with. His ceiling is so high. So I like this move by saying, we want to control how you develop, what you're going to work on specifically. He has number one D-man potential. He's still so young. Obviously, he's undersized, but he's so fast. He's got a great shot already at age 17. He's not going to be 18 until the middle of August. So having your hands all over him right away, that's good for the Hawks long term, but it doesn't do much for you right now.
Yeah, and I think there was confusion too, because, you know, it surprised me as well. I thought, you know, oh, he signed an entry level deal, like, could he play, you know, as soon as this upcoming season? But this is a slide contract, so if he doesn't play at all in the NHL, his entry level will start next year.
Okay.
But I have, you know, I kind of have a hunch that, like, he might actually get a strong look next year, because I'm not sure you want to burn his first year of the entry level deal, like, in the AHL or whatever. Like, you want to bring that guy, a player of his caliber, you want to take advantage of all three of those years.
And I think a lot of that's going to depend on how the Hawks do this season in the NHL, because if they have another struggling season and miss out on the playoffs, there's going to be a push for a lot more younger talent, and you're going to see some of these guys fast-tracked, and Boqvist would be one of the first.
So, like, with this surplus of D-men right now, I mean, they've got to trade a couple of them, right? Otherwise, Rockford's, like, I mean,
what are you getting
out
of it?
Let's say, okay, so it's seven. Let's seven they're going to keep. For sure, Seabrook, Manning, Keith, Gustafson.
And Murphy.
And then Murphy.
Although
unless he's moved, because I don't think he's worth – he's not playing at the AAV he's making right now. Joakim Haru is certainly the big question mark. And then there's, like, a few guys you put in the hat, the Forslings, the Osterlies, and the Hillmans. Like, one of those guys sticks, and the other two don't.
I think Murphy's going to have a pretty decent bounce-back season. And
why do you say that?
I say that because – if you trade Murphy, you're selling low right now.
Yeah.
Because people know what he did last year.
If played you're better down the stretch.
If you're trading Murphy, who are you getting in return? Because you're not going to get another top four defenseman in return. Because who else?
Well, no. Maybe you package that. Maybe it's Murphy,
like Murphy and
Hinostroza, or Murphy and Forsling, or whatever. And the host of Contra, you know.
But, like, you take away Murphy from the equation, and, like, it's still, like, you need that right-handed shot that can play at top. Because I don't consider, like, Seabrook ideally as a bottom pairing for me. So if you trade Murphy, like, you literally don't have anyone on the right side.
And you have no physicality outside of
And you have no physicality.
I mean, Seabrook on occasion, but he's lost a step.
So, I don't know. Like, again, they have a lot of fringe players, but to me, like, I think Blake Hillman's going to start the year in Rockford. I think really the biggest question mark in all this for me is Gustav Forsling. Like, is he going to be a part of the mix next year, or is he going to start the year or wherever in Rockford again? Because there's no way he's going to want to do that again for a third year. And, you know,
I feel like they're down on Forsling. That's just my gut. I think I know he was banged up a little bit, so that's part of the reason why he wasn't called up. If there was ever a year to call up a D-man last year, it was last year. He didn't get much of a sniff. He did well in the Calder Cup playoffs, which I think, you know, bodes well for his stock to maybe be packaged with somebody else. But Slavko, how do you see the D kind of shaping out with this many guys under contract and them still in the running for a top four D? We're just going to add to this equation. They're going to have to subtract.
Right, yeah. I mean, depth is never a bad thing, but if you've got your top talent playing in Rockford that doesn't do a ton for anybody, something's got to give. I mean, they have to be in the market at some point for a guy like a Jacob Trouba or whoever it might be. I mean, we've heard rumors today that they've had discussions with Ottawa still. I don't see Carlson moving at this point, considering they offered him a contract.
What was that number for Carlson? Was that just a token offer for the fans in Ottawa? Because there seems to be just...
I think it's a saving face kind of
thing. Yeah.
Wait, what? What did I miss?
They made an offer to Erik Karlsson, but I don't know what that number was.
I haven't seen the number.
Speaking of Ottawa, though, this is intriguing to me because we're actually jumping into the next topic of, like, talking about Hossa's contract. So the floor is 58.8. Like, Ottawa's at 60.8 right now.
Yeah.
So if they trade Karlsson, and there were rumors that, like, whoever trades for Karlsson needs to attach Bobby Ryan to it, like the Vegas. Mm-hmm. How are they going to get to the floor?
Right.
Right.
How on earth are they going to get to the floor? And they might even trade Craig Anderson too. So I don't know what Ottawa's doing, but that is like a no-brainer, Marian Hossa.
It would be a perfect too, right? And then where he starts his career, they have a special night 2 years from now, actually 3 years from now when the contract's officially over. And his 81 goes to the rafters, and everybody's happy, and it's only $3 million out of their pocket. And it gets them to the they're a hot mess in more ways than one. If he can pull something off, I mean, what do you think it would take to get Erik Karlsson in a walk year and with a huge windfall in free agency looming for him?
If you're taking on, there are two options. You're either getting Erik Karlsson and you're basically wiping out your pipeline, or you're getting Erik Karlsson and the package isn't gonna, you're getting Bobby Ryan too in return. I definitely don't see that. The Blackhawks do not want that contract.
Right.
What would it take for Karlsson? Like,
too much for a guy that you don't have any idea what he's going to do in a year.
Like Adam Boqvist, the next Erik Karlsson, apparently. Like, I don't know. I don't even think the Blackhawks, like, you would for sure have to give up, like, a Brandon Saad or someone.
Yeah, I think Saad would be the first guy that they ask for. Probably Saad and Hinostroza, Saad and Joki Haru. I mean, at the very least, I think you're going to give up two guys like that.
Well,
like,
let me ask, because I've also heard Saad's name attached to Justin Falk. Would you do that deal? Would you sell low on Saad and move him and his $6 million a year contract for a top 4D?
I would not. Would you?
I would seriously consider it.
I think you have to consider it.
Even if it's 2 years for Justin Falk?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, we all know the window is now. And
yeah, but who's going to win.
I'm not going to win. Well, I mean, guys that theoretically that can score that are on the bottom six that aren't getting top 6 minutes because Saad's been given every opportunity.
I think the only reason people are considering actually moving Saad is because we don't know the health of Corey Crawford. Like, if we know, if you know you're getting a healthy Corey Crawford next year, like, do you still make the move? Because, like, if there's a healthy Corey Crawford,
I mean,
they're
their
like.
Their defense is pathetic.
It is.
Yeah. So, like, here's the thing. And we saw one defenseman can bring up four. Because you can, if you pair, that fifth D with a two-time Norris Trophy winner who's playing at a high level, all of a sudden he looks more like a three. And then your second pairing, there's not as much responsibility placed on them. So, you know, Michael Kempney's a perfect example.
You know, I saw some quotes from him the other day saying that that trade saved his career.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a lot of people that would probably like to see Kempney on the Blackhawks right now. He wasn't going to have it. I can't see them selling that low on Saad. His value is his contract, his cap hit compared to his production last year. There's a huge discrepancy. Is it worth giving up a guy who still got?
Let me say this: if Ottawa took Saad and Hossa's contract, and you had to throw in a top level prospect,
it'd be Joki Haru or Boqvist.
Joki Haru or Boqvist.
For Carlson?
Yeah.
I'm only doing that if I'm guaranteed an extension.
Agreed.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm $5.3 million is coming off the books and six, that's 11 right there. All of a sudden, cap-wise, I'm in a much better spot, and I can, you know, with the cap seemingly going up or pointing to that, I'm in a much better position to offer him a multi-year deal. I give him a full year here.
The one thing that Stan kept bringing up was they need to have flexibility, and I think that's why term is such a big issue in free agency. DeBrincat's going to need a new contract. Schmaltz is going to need a new contract.
Yep.
He needs to make sure he locks those guys down. Hinostroza just got a very affordable deal. It's going to cost you to keep DeBrincat, and if he takes the next step this year, I mean, you're talking about a 35-40 goal scorer potentially. That's not cheap. I mean, you just saw what JVR got for $7 million. DeBrincat, I mean, he's going to want something like what Panarin wanted, and there's a reason why Panarin had to get shipped off.
I'm the kind of guy that I like building my team from the front back rather than it's reverse, because you would think you would want to build from the goalie out. But like, I watched Pittsburgh win back-to-back cups with AHL caliber defenseman, then the second was without Chris Letang. And we're going to watch the Toronto Maple Leafs next year, and they're going to be suffocating to play against because they've got Austin Matthews first line center, John Tavares, Kadri as your third line center, and then there's going to be like Connor Brown or Kapanen on your fourth line. It does not matter who's going to play defense for them. So I don't know, like,
In theory,
but
we
like,
see how it plays.
Because I've watched the New York Rangers over the last decade, and they've built from Henrik Lundqvist, and they've had top four defensemen. They've been loaded with top four defensemen, and nobody could ever score. So, like, you take away a forward up front to patch up the back end. In theory, like, you know, it would be great, but like, that's a guy I would trade Anisimov to patch up the back end, not Brandon Saad.
Okay. I would obviously
that's
go that route.
Ideal.
But I'm saying I wouldn't trade, you asked me, I wouldn't trade Brandon Saad for Justin Falk. Like, I'm
clearly they're expecting a lot of bounce back from Saad. I mean, if let's say he scores 15 more goals, that's obviously helpful. You're hoping for more. But the power play unit needs to not be bottom five.
Oh.
I mean, if they're average at best, they're still in the hunt even without Crawford. So, I mean, they're putting a lot of eggs in the basket of Crawford's healthy, Saad's going to bounce back, Taves is going to put up more than 50 points, and this team in general is going to go back to that roster that they expected, the roster that scored 10 on opening night.
Yeah, gone are the days where you can say you have a 20th to 31st ranked power play, but, oh, don't worry about it, our PK is great. You know what, that's not going to get you anywhere, because with the way they're calling penalties in this league right now, five-on-five scoring is really, really tough. In the playoffs, the teams that I saw sticking around at the end had pretty damn good power plays, all of them. And they were difference-making in each series. So they've got to figure that out this year. That has to be one of their you know, top priorities is fixing the power play and getting a unit that, at least one, that can click.
I think to me that's a bigger necessity than trading for or overpaying for or giving up forwards for a top D-man. I think clearly you'd love to have another top pairing D-man, but it might not happen. It's going to be really difficult to acquire one. But Hinostroza over 82 games, I'd love to see his speed and how much more he can contribute. You're going to have DeBrincat in year two, Schmaltz hopefully taking another step. I'm excited to see Dylan Sakura play 82 games. And if he can give you 20 goals on the bottom six, now all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, there's a little bit more balance between your four lines.
Yeah, I just haven't seen enough of Dylan Sakura to know if I traded Saad, I would be in good hands.
Agreed.
So that's a little...
You'd want to keep him in a bottom six role.
Yeah, for sure. And especially, you know, I want to see a full season of him. And, you know, he's going to be, what, 22 or 23 years old next year? So, like, he's at the point where he's reaching, you know, kind of the... It's not like he needs a few years to develop. Like, he was 4 years of college. Like, he's ready.
Should be ready.
You know.
Yeah.
A couple quick questions here from the email bag. Would have signing Peter Mrazek as a backup been a better deal for the Hawks, or is Ward that much better of an option? Also, were you at all surprised the Hawks didn't take a big-name free agent or at least make a trade for a known player? Well, I still think they will trade for a difference-making type player. We'll see if that happens or not. As far as you know, the big-name free agent, obviously, that was a smokescreen. I wanted to ask the question on the conference call yesterday. So, Stan, last week in Dallas, when you said, I don't want to ruin the surprise, were you just like, was the chuckle hut open and you were working out a stand-up routine? Or what, you know, what was really going on there? But as far as the Mrazek signing over Cam Ward, Mrazek's, 26? You know, from my perspective, they wanted to put a guy that if he is tapped on the shoulder to carry more than what a backup normally carries, they had more faith in a guy that has been in this league for 13 years.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, Cam Ward kind of checks the boxes of, you know, good guy to have in the locker room, experience, won a cup, Conn Smythe, can be a starter when needed. I also think with Mrazek that they're character concerns there. I know Detroit didn't protect him in the expansion draft because they felt like his work ethic wasn't there, so they were kind of sending him a message. And he was terrific 2 years ago, and then he just fell off, and then he was okay last year. But
I think
I wouldn't trust him I wouldn't trust him if Corey went down. Like, I would much rather have, you know, Cam Ward, a guy that, you know, his experience is well liked. Like, you know, Mrazek, I have too many red flags there.
I have an irrational like for Peter Mrazek ever since he dominated the World Juniors. I don't know, it seems like it's a decade ago now, but at 1.5 with Mrazek versus 3 with Ward, I think Bowman pretty much dispelled that on the conference call, saying, look, we know what Cam Ward offers. We want consistency in net. And he pointed out to Forsberg saying he was not consistent and he had every opportunity to take that number one goalie job. He didn't.
I also think not going after Carter Hutton and signing him, to me, showed that they have confidence that Corey is in better shape than a lot of people out there think. Well, like, to me, if you went after, you know, like somebody who was tabbed to be, like Carter Hutton said, Buffalo said, hey, you're going to be our number one.
He took less money because he basically was driven to start a job.
So, like, they could have got him, I would think, if you know, with the money that they ended up spending. If they felt that was the top priority because they had no faith in where Crawford's health was, I think that would have been kind of the tipping thing. Like, okay, obviously, they're worried, so that's why they're going that route. Going the Cam Ward route shows to me that maybe – it's not as bad as many people think.
Yeah, exactly. And that's precisely what I said on the last podcast. I think it was like whatever the number is going to be indicative, and whatever the term is. Like if they went and got a Jonathan Bernier or
Hutton.
Carter Hutton, yeah, thank you. Like, that would have been concerning me because Corey Crawford's year contract expires in 2 years, you know. So it's like if they went and got a guy that with a, on a 2 or 3 year contract, like they're looking beyond that because they're very clearly not confident. And then Anton Forsberg too is a I think he's an RFA after this next season, so it'll be interesting to see whether they peg him as like the goalie of the future and they just try to stash him in. Stan's conference call yesterday, you think they're gonna
carry three? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. And I should have asked, it was my question too, and I assumed that he was going to start the year in Rockford and basically asked Stan, like, you know, what's your plan with him going forward? But he didn't mention Rockford at all. He just said, like, he's going to be right there in the mix pushing guys in training camp. So it'll be interesting to see. I still think ideally he would like to start the year in Rockford, but then it takes away starts from Colin Delia.
I'd rather have, I mean, if what's the point of carrying three? That does nothing for Forsberg if he's never going to play.
Maybe just learning under Cam Ward. I don't know. Just being in the locker room.
I'm not defending it.
I'm just saying, there's no way they would carry three goalies because.
Or they know that Corey's not going to be good the first month, but he, you know, like, I don't know. Wherever, you know, I don't know. The whole ambiguity of Corey Crawford's health, it drives me crazy, but it is what it is, so. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. I mean, look, if he had to be moved and all of a sudden we said, oh, okay, so the Panarin deal looks even worse right now because the backup goalie that you got in there you thought was Darling's replacement didn't turn out to be that way. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it if I get a piece. You know, if he's included in a package, you know, good riddance, whatever. what do you think about the Leafs and Tavares? He takes less money to go to the team he cheered for as a kid. It was an interesting courting process. Didn't quite have the LeBron feel to it, although it was conducted in L.A. at CAA with Pat Brisson and his crew. Ultimately, I guess the Players Association probably doesn't love that he took a little less money, but he's going to be able to make the mortgage payment.
Yeah, I love it. I think Toronto is such a I went to Toronto for the first time this past winter.
I love that city.
Unbelievable. Like, I mean, hockey needs their stars to be in kind of like a larger market. Because, like, Tavares didn't get a lot of love.
Is New York not a large enough market for it?
Well, they're the secondary.
Right, yeah.
And
no,
they've got, you know, like, if Tavares was on the Rangers.
That's
like,
a different story.
Yeah, or, like, you know, with L.A., like Kopitar and Doughty, like they don't get Ryan Getzlaf. They don't get enough. But anyways, I love it. I think the East needs a powerhouse, kind of like the Blackhawks. Like, one of the best things that happened to the NHL was the Blackhawks being successful for like 8 years. It just dominate 8 years. I think Toronto is going to be that for Canada. Maybe we'll see, you know, who knows if interest level increases with the NHL viewing and maybe the cap goes up because of it. I don't know, but I think
the Leafs are clearly a huge draw, and Montreal hasn't been there outside of 1 or 2 years sprinkled in. But I mean, we've seen
is rebuilding,
right? We've seen multiple seasons in the NHL where no Canadian team makes the playoffs, and that can't happen,
and they haven't won the cup forever.
Yeah, I mean, they're what, 50 years now, more than
was it Calgary, I think, was the last.
I don't know. Not important,
Canadian
but
team to win the cup? Got it.
I was thinking Toronto, just Toronto.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
they've got the longest drought.
Their drought is long.
But I love it. Like, so the Islanders, I think, are still in pretty good shape because they just drafted Oliver Wallstrom and Noah Dobson back to back. Like,
they fell into their laps.
They
here's the thing that would have been interesting: had the Lou Lamoriello taken over like a year ago and had a full year to begin the reshaping process and to court Tavares and make the offer, you know, somewhere in the season or what have you, it might have been a different story. But, you know, the way it shook down, and it was interesting, Slavko, like John said, that it was Babcock's how he was going to use him that really got him going. And we talked about it earlier. They kind of gave like a Cubs-like pitch, like they did to Lester, to Tavares.
You're our guy to take us to the next level.
Is he going
to
be captain,
I was
way?
Just about
yeah,
to
yeah,
ask.
He's got to be, right?
I had this debate with a friend the other day.
So here's my thing. I don't always go – it's not best player, it's best leader, right? I mean,
well
– in theory, usually –
You want one in the same, right?
Yeah.
Chris Kunitz is a good leader.
Right now, Patrick Kane's the best player, obviously. The best leader since day one has been Jonathan Toews.
But do you bring in a new guy, despite obviously his track record and what he's done, do you bring in someone fresh into that dressing room and just hand him the captaincy? I don't think anybody would mind.
Yeah.
They gave Panarin like an A right away.
But
like in Columbus.
An A and a C, different thing.
And Columbus and Toronto, little different.
But that's an intriguing part because I thought they were going to name, like, Connor McDavid, Edmonton was like, you're our captain. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, from, you know,
whatever. Nobody has this debate. Nobody has a young superstar and a guy who is the number one free agent who was a captain in, you know, the number one market coming to Toronto.
Well,
I mean, it's a...
A part of the reason why they also traded Taylor Hall was because it was going to create a sticky situation between Connor McDavid and Taylor Hall because I guess...
How'd that work out?
Well, I guess Taylor Hall wanted the captaincy and they gave it to Connor McDavid, so whatever. But I do think it's interesting that they haven't given Austin Matthews the captain yet. Like, it's been... He's working on his third year of entry-level deal. Like, I don't...
Well, I mean, remember, the rookie year, he doesn't let them talk to the media. That's the way Babcock runs.
Oh, that's like, the way Lou Lamoriello did.
Yeah, Lou and Babcock.
Because he's not letting Josh Rosen and the Islanders, they're not letting him speak to the media at all during training camp.
Quickly, we were talking about it a little bit, Slavko, within the division, what jumps out to you, the Blues and their additions?
No one else really did much of anything. Colorado, but the Blues made a huge splash on day one, trading for Ryan O'Reilly. And they gave up a good chunk. I think the picks hurt more than what they gave up for players. Sobotka was part of the deal. I can't remember who else off the top of my head.
Berglund.
Berglund. They didn't give up. They kept most of their top prospects, gave up some picks and some, you know, depth players, some nice players. But you look at that as a win for them. Signing David Perron, 4-for-4, I think, is a great deal. And he's got familiarity with the Blues already.
Bozak,
too. That might have been a little bit of a stretch for me, but... I mean, you add up the middle, and they got considerably better on July 1.
Winnipeg loses Stastny.
Mm-hmm. Which I was surprised. I thought they were going to get him when they traded Mason.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was part of the reason why they went after him at the trade deadline and made, you know, the move that they did.
They've got guys that they need to re-sign, though. I think they're kind of...
Well, yeah, they do.
I mean, they've got guys that are going to get big-time contracts.
Right, right.
And Trouba's sitting there right now asking, hey, I want a big-time contract too. So they're... They're not where the Hawks were in, you know, 10 and 13, but they're getting there because you draft well, you get great players, you're going to have to pay them.
Yeah, Nashville got, I think one of their signings was Zach Rinaldo. Like, I don't know.
Super.
I think the Blues.
Hawks fans will love playing against him more often.
I think the Blues are obviously the winners in the division, but I think it's good news for the Blackhawks because, like, I thought Winnipeg was going to be a powerhouse and, you know, they take away Stastny from the middle and whatever, and they didn't really replenish with anything. I think ideally, basically, they're just going to use the cap space to extend all these young guys they have. But they didn't get better. The only team that got better in the division are the Blues.
A week from now, when we're doing the next podcast, or whenever breaking news happens, we can jump in and do a
podcast.
Might
hop back in a couple hours.
Yeah, are we going to be doing a podcast here in the next week about a significant trade that Stan Bowman makes?
All right, if you're saying Erik Karlsson's significant, I'm going to say no.
I'm saying any player that makes over $3 million.
Yes. I said this, I think, even on draft day. We were expecting them to do more on the day of the draft or the day before the draft, and they ended up making both their first-round picks. I think there's no way they don't make one or two trades in the next 10 days.
We did a podcast going into the draft, and we were like, what's our bold prediction, whatever. We were both wrong there, and then I was like, well, free agency, we'll see some fireworks. Both wrong there. So I'm going to say no. Like, I'm going to say this
really?
Is their – yeah. I'm going to say I think here's the biggest – I think
depressing.
They're
going
to – Yeah. I think they're going to find a way to get rid of Hossa's contract before the start of the year. But
really? And they're just going to package that with nothing and just say
– Well, I think they'll get, like, I don't know. It was a – give them a center, like Ryan Zingle or whatever. A center.
Okay.
I don't see a significant move. Like, I'm going to need to see it
I'm
to believe it.
I'm still thinking Justin Falk. I'll stick with that one. He fits what they need. His price point isn't too much.
But the further we get away, the further into the summer we get, I feel like the least likely that happens. The less.
I don't necessarily agree with that because they traded Nick Leddy late in the year. No, that was cap related reasons, but I don't know. Like, I keep waiting for it, and then I keep going back to that when Stan Bowman was on the pregame show and he's saying our team's gonna look similar next year. Well, now, like, I'm actually starting to believe it.
Wow, so they really are looking similar.
What's the trade then for Falk? Or what are you giving up?
Anisimov, if he put Carolina down, which he probably didn't. But it would be something like a Forsling or a Murphy. Because they might want a young D-man controllable contract.
We're like trying to convince ourselves.
You know how I got three or four fives or sixes that you can pick from. Okay.
But why would
I would consider moving Hinostroza if I could get a top four D.
Would you move Yoki Haru? Let's say Yoki Haru and Forsling for Falk. Because if I'm Carolina, that's what I want.
I think they would need a Hinostroza in there too.
You're saying to match salary, or that Carolina would ask for that?
I just don't know. They're going to trade a defenseman to get two defensemen.
Yeah, but one's a top pick, and
I don't see it.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens here. you don't think anything's going to happen?
No.
Charlie Romeliotis.
I wouldn't be surprised, honestly.
I think they'll go get a bottom pairing a bottom six center.
they need another five or six. They need another good third pairing defenseman.
I think they'll find a way to move Hossa's contract, and I think they'll get a bottom six center. But I think that's
all
it.
Right. Like, I could live with that.
Marcus Kruger might be available.
All right, Slavko, you think?
I think they make one trade for a considerable. An asset, you know, someone who's going to give you big minutes, whether it's a forward or a D-man. And then I think probably a secondary move.
An absolute guy. Saad is on the no-trade zone for all of you.
No, he's not. I wouldn't trade him.
All right.
No one's untradeable.
This is true. Except Patrick Kane.
You trade Panarin to get Saad, and then you're going to trade Saad to get Justin.
Dude, don't even get him in the end. The trade's never going to look good. All right?
It's wouldn't have looked as bad if Anton Forsberg was formidable.
True.
If Saad goes back to being an all-star and putting up 30 goals, then it looks okay.
We're pushing our limit here.
Charlie Romeliotis, Slavko Bekovic, great job as always. We'll be on top of it. Again, if they make a deal, we will do an emergency podcast.
Stay tuned.
I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Until next time, go Hawks!